Welcome to the Neo-Narcissism Podcast, hosted by emotional intelligence specialists Kim and Jackie of Element Q, alongside strategic psychotherapist Brad Kaufman.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Neo-Narcissism Podcast. We're happy to have you join us today, and our topic for today's episode is all around gaslighting. There's a lot of information in regards to this, and it is such a common term that people are using, but I think it's worth delving into more of the details of that and what it can really look like in overt ways and really subtle ways.
Yeah.
So that's what we're diving into. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can start with just sort of defining what gaslighting is.
Sure. Well, I mean, what it derives from is a movie from the 40s, which is actually based on a play from the 30s. Now, this is to my understanding, where it's a story about how a guy basically gets this lady to question her reality, right? Question her own sanity. Mm-hmm. So basically what he does is he goes around in their environment and basically intentionally manipulates the environment and basically messes with what she thinks is happening.
Well, she has her reality that she's living, right? Mm-hmm. Her perception of reality that she's mm-hmm. living, and he messes with that in somewhat subtle ways.
Yes.
So that you start to slowly feel like you might be going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then when she questions it and questions him and looking to rebalance that reality, he, you know, denies everything and basically encourages her to feel crazy. It's all her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and gaslighting has kind of evolved over the years to include, you know, provoking people into reactions. And then if somebody reacts, you point to that reaction as though they're crazy. So it has nothing to do with the poke, 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 mm-hmm. the intending to trigger and provoke. It's once the reaction happens that they then point at that as being the only reality that exists, as though all of the provocation or provoking has been erased. Mm-hmm. So,
because you get this big response at the end of it, right? This big reaction that might look like an overreaction out of context, and then that's all the focus is on, is the overreaction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then that person being either at fault or crazy or unstable or whatever they want to like label that.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cruel.
Yes. Yeah.
So maybe let's talk about some real life examples of this, like where we might see it in more common day-to-day interactions. So people can really keep their eye open for it.
Well, I can say in my experience, if I would communicate something, right, of course, as the message deliverer, you're encoding a message in a certain way and then you have to communicate it. And the whole point of communication is to get, you know, one idea or one concept from one person over to the other person. So you have the encoder and you have the decoder. You know, communication 101 type thing. So now with that, in my experience, what I would do is I would communicate in a certain way. And when I felt that the message wasn't landing properly, I would go, okay, let me just recalibrate my wording in order to get the message across. Because there's a difference between communication and messaging. So to get the message across, the thing is, I would get gaslit in the sense of everything getting focused on, yeah, but you said, yeah, okay, I might have used those words, but what I'm trying to say, the message that I'm intending to send is, and I get to clarify my message versus the gaslighting that would happen would be, no, you're saying this. And it's like, well, I get to clarify what I'm intending to say, right? It's not up to the other person to define what it is. And so that's a very subtle way for people to gaslight you, is to basically put the message that you're intending. And of course, in my situation, it was always spun as though I was trying to be mean or cruel or something like that, when in reality, it's like there was none of that at play. So, and it's like it was so pervasive and so pushed that they literally want you to buy their story. They want you to buy their interpretation of your message.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Like, I'm choosing to and want to hear it this way so mm-hmm. that I can make you the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're supposed to get on board with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is absolute crazy making. And when you don't get on board with it, then basically all hell breaks loose. And then you're responsible for all hell breaking loose.
Yeah.
And if you could just say it right in the first place, well, again, what defines what right is? I'm trying to communicate a message in a certain way, and I don't have a script in front of me. And usually in healthy communication, you can just express yourself and the person says, oh, what do you mean about that? And you clarify, and you clarify to the point of getting your message across, right? So.
Part of the point of this, though, right, when the narcissist accuses you of being mean, is to distract from the message, but also possibly true on their end, because it feels mean to call them out on a truth that you're seeing.
Right.
So is it accurate in their experience that it feels mean? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That is their experience of it.
That's what their feeling
yeah.
experience is.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what their feeling experience is.
Yeah.
But that's not the truth. What's happening there is that you've just triggered that response because you're speaking to an underlying truth that mm-hmm. they don't want to look at and see and acknowledge and take responsibility for.
That, see, that's a really good point too. And the way that I like to say it is there's a massive difference between what feels true and what is true. Now, sometimes mm-hmm. you can feel what is true and those things can align, but oftentimes, especially within a narcissistic dynamic, what feels true and what is true is very different. So what the narcissist feels is happening is truth to them, versus what is more objective or factual truth to the actual situation. Now, yeah, we're getting a little bit off from this, but yeah, that's one example. So if you're trying to communicate something and that person is trying to put words in your mouth, you know, rather than listening to your words and listening and believing the words that you are intending, that you intended from the beginning, then you're most likely being gaslit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's one example.
Mm-hmm.
Are,
do you have an example?
Are there others?
I've heard an example one time of somebody who was doing filing, like set up a file system and did it in alphabetical order. And the narcissist came in and said, why'd you file it this way? And she said, it's in alphabetical order. That's what people do. You file in alphabetical order. And he said to her, no, it's not. That nobody does that.
Yes.
Nobody would use the logic of following the alphabet to find
information.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it can be, like, that to me really sums it up, because you're following a very logical procedure. That's what we're trained. That's what you're taught in school. You follow the alphabet. You know, I mean, you could create any kind of filing system,
sure.
but I think you would
mm-hmm.
default to following alphabetical. But if you're with in relationship with a narcissist who is gaslighting you, like, that to me really sums it up. Like, because you're questioning, well, did I learn what I learned in school appropriately? Like, are you know, like, dirt.
See, there it is. You start questioning yourself. You start questioning your own logic and your own reason and what would typically be common sense.
Yeah.
That's another major indicator of gaslighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think what I've found is you're doing something that to you seems very logical.
Mm-hmm.
It's grounded in common sense, but then it's questioned. And it can be subtly or quite in your face, but then you don't even have, like, you're so thrown off your footing that you don't have the capacity to actually see that it's them throwing you off your footing, because then you go into the internal gaslighting and questioning everything that you thought about yourself, and then you're so far removed from that initial moment,
mm-hmm.
you don't even know it's tied to that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what I think was really important about your example is saying there nobody files that way.
Yeah.
Who would file that way?
Yeah.
So this person didn't get instruction on how to file, just create a filing system. And then to put it on them as if, well, like, you're crazy to think that things would be filed alphabetically. Who else would ever do that? Right? Like, that's such a good indicator as well as to what's happening there. And I think you bring up another excellent point, which we should address, is the internal gaslighting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead, roll with it.
Yeah, because the internal gaslighting, when you've experienced gaslighting on a pretty consistent, regular basis, and you start to question that reality, your own perception of reality, you don't need the narcissist to even cue that anymore.
Nope.
You can do it completely to yourself. Where it can be paralyzing in making decisions, in feeling it chips away your confidence, because, well, you don't know what you're doing anyway, right? And you just reinforce the messaging from the narcissist for yourself. And then you can just sort of internally gaslight yourself. Now, did you have anything you want to add to that?
No, I think that is a sign from years and years of narcissistic abuse,
mm-hmm.
that you just become trained, like you said, it may start that the gaslighting is really obvious and overt and then becomes more and more and more subtle. And then it may just even be a look, gesture, a sound that will just start that internal gaslighting cycle.
So that's the important part, is that kind of ongoing brainwashing component to things. Because I hear all the time in my counseling practice, I hear the internal scripts and how they're being run and how people will literally judge their internal experience. And typically in therapy, through therapeutic approaches, we call this the internalized critical parent. But for the sake of our podcast and everything, I think we could, and maybe even the reality of the world today, is we internalize the critical narcissist, right? Or the critical antisocial sociopath or psychopath. So where we start to judge ourselves for having normal, regular human experiences,
mm-hmm.
and we start to limit our ability to have these just natural experiences. We are allowed to have human flaws and to work and learn, develop through them. But according to a narcissist, we have to be perfect all the time. So that's another form of gaslighting too, is setting a certain unrealistic standard and then holding somebody to a standard that is actually unachievable. I would argue even the narcissist has a very internal critic that they can never find approval.
I would agree with that.
Also,
I think that's partly what can be so triggering,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you're just, when you hold that mirror up, you're just showing them that internal, experience that they're having.
Mm-hmm.
The one comment I was going to make too that I've read and witnessed is that people that have been in narcissistic abuse so much with internal gaslighting, like, I don't even think they have the capacity of knowing what they like for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just that lack of connection to what food do they like, what colors do they like to wear, just simple things that, you learn as a child and you take, I guess, for granted that you have that capacity of knowing. When you've been gaslighted so long from childhood, you don't even know that information for yourself.
Well, and that's a really good point.
Yeah. No, go ahead, Brett. Yeah.
Because children of narcissistic parents, the parent tends to be highly controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no autonomy for the child. Like, I've seen it where the parent is picking out clothes for the child, for the next day, and laying those clothes out. And all of the decisions are made for the child, and there's no age-appropriate decision-making power given. And like you're saying, our power lies within our ability to choose.
Yeah.
And when you don't train a child to be able to make choice, I mean, to me, it's a serious form of abuse, but it's unaddressed, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So.
And I could see that similarly happening in a relationship as well. Like, it's mm-hmm. a slightly different, but in a romantic relationship later on, if you are with somebody who is so controlling with the finances or with her different stories, like controlling the monies and different things, I could see that slowly whittling away.
Or even how the significant other dresses.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It can start out as like, oh, I really like you in these things. And then you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, why not? Right? And then, but that just starts to get further and further controlled and sort of dismissed if you're not wearing something that they would approve of, in quotation marks. Right? And then you don't even need to do that or to have them do that because you're just doing that for yourself.
Yeah.
And I do think it can create somewhat of an identity crisis or this dissociation from your true self.
Yeah.
When you've been in that situation for extended periods of time.
Yeah, because what you end up doing is you end up doing this external referencing
mm-hmm.
all the time for approval or for whatever standard is being set outside of you. So this is another form of gaslighting where all of a sudden your judgments or your discernments or your choices or all of that type of stuff starts to get looked at as less than or treated as less than. So then you shy away from standing up in your own, again, volition, that power of personal agency to make your own choices for yourself. Because if you do stand up, and let's say you like to wear, in my experience, there was a red shirt. I really, really loved this red shirt for whatever reason. I just like the fit and the feel and everything of it. But it was not okay. For whatever reason, this particular shirt, this particular color was not okay. And so I couldn't wear it in the presence of, and ultimately it disappeared, right? It just disappeared.
It just vanished.
Yeah. And so it was gotten rid of. But the thing is, though, to stand up and say, no, I'm going to wear this, or I'm going to do this, or... I mean, it's within reason. There's nothing morally or ethically wrong with me wearing a red shirt, right? But apparently it's a great offense if it doesn't fit into the narcissistic picture of what they think is supposed to happen in a certain way. So, and then if you stand up and just take a stance for trying to be a normal human being, all of a sudden it turns into like World War III, which again, you feel like you're going crazy. How is this such a big deal? And again, you try to reason with the unreasonable and it just doesn't work.
Did you try to see it from this person's perspective as well? Like, were you looking at yourself in the retro being like, is it like not?
Yeah, yeah, totally. And so, but there were other shirts of the same style that were acceptable. So
just not red.
So, and again, as soon as you jump in to try to get a sense of why, like what's going on, I remember even asking the question, like, is, do you have a traumatic experience where somebody was wearing red, or like, you know, or red just in general, like what,
and triggering.
Yeah, like I want to understand. Like, I was seriously trying to figure out what is going on, what is with the shirt, right? There was no feedback. But again, it's like the gaslighting of you making your own choice is somehow wrong when it has nothing to do with right or wrong.
I think you pointed to something else really valuable there when you said you couldn't get feedback, so you'd inquire, like. Because, you know, we'll be respectful to our people around us if, like, yeah, there was something really deeply painful and triggering about that color, then maybe you would choose to sort of wear it only in certain situations. But when you can't get a response, like, I think that's also maybe, like, something that people could look for, right? Like, I'm asking a legit clarifying question here for a deeper understanding, and you can't answer it.
Well, exactly. And the thing is, you can't, it's very difficult to work with something you don't understand that you're working with. It's very difficult to carry a sensitivity towards something if that sensitivity isn't well defined. Mm-hmm. So let's say a trauma did happen around a red shirt or something like that. Great. I would 100% be sensitive to that trauma. And let's go get help around that trauma. I will come to counseling with you. I will sit there. I will support you. Let's resolve whatever trauma this is. Something is getting triggered. Let's resolve it.
Yeah.
But again, you know, you can't go that direction. It's just you're an asshole if you wear that red shirt.
And you're the problem.
Right.
Yeah. Not the person who has an issue with a red shirt.
And I know, like, that sounds so flippant, right? But in that moment, it was like that shirt felt like a massive mountain in the middle of the relationship. And so, you know, just one of those massive mountains in the middle of the relationship where it's like, how is something so small made into something so big? And this again ties into gaslighting. They will take something as little as this and just blow it up.
Go from molehill to mountain.
Yes.
And also mountain to molehill. Yes. So go the opposite way.
Yeah.
If you have any questions or any clarification around this, drop us a line and we're happy to see if we can answer that for you.
Exactly. At the Neo Narcissism Podcast.
At gmail.com.
So, and we're happy to communicate with you there. And as always, you don't know how to deal with something until you know what you're dealing with. We'll see you next time.